We're going to move now to Dr. Vince Smith. He's a professor of economics in the Department of Agricultural Economics and Economics at the Montana State University and is co-director of Montana State University's Agricultural Marketing Policy Center. He's received his PhD from North Carolina State University in 1987 and a bachelor and master's degree from the University of Manchester in 1970 and 71, respectively. Dr. Smith's current research programs examines agricultural trade, domestic policy issues, with a particular focus on agricultural insurance, agricultural science policy, domestic and world commodity markets, risk management, and the agricultural trade policy. He is author of 9 books, monographs, and published over 200 articles and book chapters on agricultural economics, agricultural policy, and other economic issues, including health economics, altruism, and science policy. His work has been recognized nationally, internationally, through multiple national awards and outstanding research and educational programs. In 2008, he became a distinguished scholar of the Western Agricultural Economics Association, and in 2011, he received the Bruce Gardner Award for outstanding contributions to economic analyst work at USDA. Currently, he's also an American Enterprise Institute visiting scholar and a co-director of the AEI's 2012 Farm Bill Agricultural Policy Initiative. Dr. Smith?
Thanks, Trent. Always good to hear from you, and thanks to everybody for organizing this program. What I'm going to talk about is the evolution and current structure and potential future of U.S. agriculture policy, and I'm going to move as swiftly as I can. So let's get rid of the introductory slide. Just an overview. Over the past 15 years, the U.S. farm lobby, in particular USDA administrators, perhaps to their shame, and Congressional Agriculture Committee members have increasingly chosen to describe what are now known as Title I and Title 11 programs in the 2014 Farm Bill as risk management and farm safety net programs. While unequivocally those programs increase farm incomes and reduce participating farms' risks of going out of business, they do anything but reduce overall risk-taking by the farm sector. They do the exact opposite. They incentivize risk because they transfer the consequences of risk-taking away from the individual farm or ranch to the taxpayer. The research here is pretty unequivocal. In fact, for the most part, the impact of many of the reauthorized crop insurance programs in the 2000 Farm Bill, as I said, is the exact opposite. The increase in risk-taking by farmers that directly derives from the incentives in created by the U.S. Crop Insurance Program in some important dimensions creates some environmental degradation issues. The U.S. Agriculture Insurance Programs, both of the major new or pure crop subsidy programs, which are price loss coverage and agricultural risk coverage, these are sometimes called crop insurance programs. They're nothing like crop insurance programs. Nobody pays a premium, and payments are not tied to current production at all. But those programs raise WTO issues that are far more severe than those associated with the now-defunct direct payments program, which essentially they replaced. Similar concerns exist with respect to the new Stax Cotton Program and the new Dairy Margin Protection Program, both of which are what are called amber box in the WTO context. What did the Farm Bill do? It terminated the Direct Payments Program, the Countercyclical Payments Program, and the ACRE programs. It ended a plethora of milk price support programs that had essentially outlived their usefulness because the support prices had dropped well below any likely persistent market prices. It ended the Sure Crop Disaster Program. It modified the Cotton Loan Rate Program and ended other cotton programs in order to make the cotton program WTO compatible. But the new Stax program is clearly amber box. Right now, this year, sign up under that program is modest. The problem with that program is that you can opt in or opt out of it. So when it's time to sign up in a given year, if you think that the payout will be large, you'll sign up. That's an issue that has been raised by a whole number of people. And the Farm Bill refunds a suite of 4 modestly funded livestock disaster aid programs, all of which are WTO compatible because of the way they're structured. And that makes them a little bit different from most other U.S. subsidy programs. So what else did the Farm Bill do? It introduced a new set of Title I programs, price loss coverage and agricultural risk coverage, and those are subsidy programs, for which only crops previously eligible for direct, countercyclical, and acre payments are eligible, with the exception of cotton, which is not eligible for those programs. A new supplemental crop insurance coverage option was introduced to allow essentially farmers to buy down their crop insurance deductibles. Sign up for that has been extremely modest, partly because relatively few crops are covered, partly because at sign-up time for the 2015 crop year, individuals had not decided whether they were going to go into ARC or PLC. If you go into ARC, you're not eligible for that program. And there was especially, and then you have the Stacked Income Protection Plan, which is essentially a specially subsidized SCO program for cotton. It introduced a new dairy margin protection program for milk producers that has insurance aspects and is also clearly amber box because of its link to current prices. It also has the potential to involve substantial subsidies, although this year's sign-up was relatively modest. But again, you can opt in or opt out if you're a dairy producer, and in years where it looks like the program will pay off, perhaps when prices for feed are relatively high compared to prices for milk, sign-up is likely to be much larger. And there's a modified program for crops and forage not covered by the federally subsidized crop insurance program under the NAP program. It allows for some coverage buy-up instead of being a quasi-disaster aid program and may, at the very small margin, create what economists call moral hazard incentives for changes in generating changes in production practices that actually would involve more risk. But it's likely those effects are going to be very modest because the size of the program itself is very modest. The bill legislates the continued downsizing of the Conservation Reserve Program. That may change because as prices fall for major crops, the attractiveness of the Conservation Reserve Program increases from the perspective of farm commodity groups. It continues the Conservation Stewardship Program at a relatively high level of funding, even though the program is widely viewed by economists as providing very few additional environmental benefits. You don't get much for what, or perhaps anything, for what is being paid for in that program. That seems to be the empirical evidence. It rationalizes a range of other conservation programs, which is a good thing. It continues the EQIP program, which is a cost-share program related to capital improvements that have environmental benefits, and it continues the various conservation easement programs. But at levels of funding that imply only transfers and no real effects on green space and wildlife habitat, effectively just a very small-scale income transfer program in the end. And here's the point. The amount of money is available is about $1 million per state per year. That would buy three farms into the easement programs, roughly current levels of funding. And if you just think about what that means, say, in an area in a green area surrounding, say, Columbus, Ohio, three farms going in will not really have much effect on urban sprawl and will not do much to maintain the overall statewide environment. What does the 2014 Farm Bill do? It continues a 25-year shift in subsidies towards, quote, crop insurance and other farm safety net programs. There's a slight reduction on conservation program spending, mainly because of reductions in the Conservation Reserve Program. There's almost a complete shift away from traditional price support, loan rate, etc. subsidy programs because the loan rates are so low relative to any plausible set of future prices over the next 5 years. This slide just shows over the period 1996 through 2018 how spending has changed. And the yellow line here is traditional programs. And as you can see, that yellow column has virtually disappeared in 2014 under the 2014 Farm Bill. From being the largest column, it's now almost non-existent. On the other hand, conservation spending expanded all the way through the end of 2013 under the 2008 Farm Bill. Under the 2014 Farm Bill, spending has moderated a little bit, about $500 million. And the red line is the shallow loss welfare programs, that is ARC and PLC. what has really happened is that light blue column has expanded and expanded and expanded, and that's the crop insurance program, which now CBO estimates over the four-year period of the farm bill would run at about $9 billion annually. So that you can see how programs have shifted. I'm going to skip this slide because we're running out of time. And I'm going to skip the discussion of why ARC and PLC will cost so much more than was estimated by the Congressional Budget Office in 2014. It's simply that they used a baseline with relatively high prices, and prices are much lower now. And I'm going to move right along through all these slides, which just provide you information on the programs and price forecasts, all the way through to policy issues for the 2019 Farm Bill. Why 2019? Because we've not had a farm bill at its scheduled time since 2002. The 2007 bill became 2008. The 2012 bill became 2014. And it's quite likely we'll see a farm bill in 2019 rather than 2018 because, as Jess Peterson pointed out earlier, 2018 is an election year for Congress. And in general, the House and Senate Agriculture Committees truly prefer to see bills passed in non-election years for a whole variety of reasons, some good, some not so good. ARC and PLC are likely to cost about 90% more than was claimed by the House and Senate Ag Committees prior to passage of the 2014 Farm Bill. That has not gone unnoticed by interest groups critical of farm spending, some of which, for example, Heritage, are very influential on the Republican side. So farm spending is likely, if there's a president elected that's a Republican and the House and Senate remain Republican, to be quite substantially under fire. Crop insurance continues to be the largest item in the budget, and especially many interest groups on the right and the left view the harvest price option revenue contract as an expensive waste of money. Now, farmers don't have that view because they certainly pays out very nicely for them on a net basis. But it has been identified on the right and the left as essentially simply a heavily subsidized call program. And the administration over the last several years has argued that the harvest price option should no longer be subsidized. And that has resonated, at least in some places in Congress. The ARC-PLC choice has been widely viewed as overcomplicated by many farmers, and the structure of the program may be revisited, simply because many farmers have said the program's too complicated. Conservation programs may also be revisited. For example, if commodity prices remain at current or more moderate levels, as I said earlier, then farm groups may well push for an expansion of the Conservation Reserve Program. That money might well come out of the Conservation Stewardship Program, which beyond the farm sector is being criticized as essentially a subsidy program targeted especially to states like Iowa. The original proposer of that project was from Iowa, a congressman from Iowa. And the program was pushed heavily by the hog industry, by the way. So you could see a reallocation of funds between those two programs. And with that, I'm going to end and show you the most interesting slide, which is of the Gallatin River and people floating down that, risking life and limb. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for a great presentation, Dr. Smith. So we have a couple questions came in to you, and then we'll move to the panel. And I know Dr. Bunning had to leave the class, so it will be a panel with you and Jess. So a couple questions that came in for Vince is, what are some of the key points of discussion and moving into the next farm bill, and what do you think will change, and what do you think will stay the same?
Budget will always be an issue, so the baseline, what's called the baseline, will be the initial focus of discussion. Now, the baseline for the farm bill is close to $100 billion a year, of which the majority is allocated for nutrition programs. Seems unlikely that the nutrition programs will be the subject of any debate. The Republican Party's fingers were heavily burnt as a result of the push to separate nutrition out from the farm bill. Now, whether or not that's a good thing is a different matter, but nutrition is probably off the table in terms of cuts in spending for a whole bunch of reasons. The other issue is the other issue, though, comes back to spending under ARC and PLC. And the rhetoric is going to be as follows. Those programs were put in to replace direct payments. Direct payments was roughly $5 billion a year. The claim was these programs will cost roughly $2 billion or more less. Now it looks like they're going to cost $1.5 billion more than the direct payments program. And so fiscal hawks are going to very sharply address that program. There's also going to be a debate about the value of crop insurance programs, whether or not they should stay as structured. The evidence really is pretty clear that they've encouraged the expansion of production into environmentally fragile lands. So this is going to be a difficult issue for the coalition of the environmental groups and the farm groups, because that program puts them in direct conflict, and increasingly the environmental groups are aware of that.
All right, thank you very much for the good answer and the presentation.